Have you ever found yourself staring at that wall of text, you know, the terms of service, and just thought, nope, not today, before clicking, I agree. Don't worry, you are absolutely not alone. It's pretty much universal. But for you, the artist, that little I agree button when signing up for a music distributor, well, that's a binding contract. And the real question is, what exactly are you signing?
That's precisely our mission today. We're going to pull back the curtain on DistroKid's terms of service. Think of yourself, our listener, as our, well, our most important client today. We've done the, let's say, painstaking work of digging through all 13 pages of that legalese, so you don't have to. We're here to figure out what artists are really agreeing to and, you know, if these terms are, like, top music attorney approved.
Right. And this isn't just some academic thing. There's this whole bigger conversation happening about these middleman companies in music distribution and, you know, concerns about them potentially taking royalties they shouldn't be. We saw this with TuneCore, right? Their terms got updated pretty quickly after that demand letter back in December 2023. What's interesting with DistroKid, though, is their terms. They haven't been updated since June 8, 2021. So pretty stable for a while now.
Yeah, and right off the bat, it's worth highlighting something really positive, a good foundation. DistroKid explicitly says they do not take any copyright or other interest in your music. They just get a limited license to distribute it. And honestly, that's a crucial starting point.
Okay, so let's unpack this for you, our client. Say you just uploaded your first track. What's the very first thing you need to get about how DistroKid handles your music, specifically those identifiers?
Okay, so when you upload, DistroKid automatically generates these unique ISRC codes for each recording, sends them to the stores. Now, if you're on a Music Plus or label account, you actually get the option to specify your own ISRC codes, just for clarity, right? The ISRC identifies your specific recording like a fingerprint for that one audio file, a UPC that identifies the whole product like an album. DistroKid handles the ISRC, but not usually the UPC.
That distinction matters. Okay,
yeah.
And building on that, what's the killer pro tip you've got for artists about these ISRCs? Because I've heard some, some bad stories.
Oh, this is critical. Look, always, always note down your ISRC numbers. Keep them somewhere safe in a personal document. Why? Because these codes, they're the key. They let you keep all your plays and data if you ever move your music somewhere else. If you re-upload to another distributor and just pop in those original ISRC numbers, boom, all your plays should transfer. Trying to find those codes years later, it's like finding a needle in a digital haystack. Almost impossible. So document them now. It's your digital history.
That's incredibly valuable advice. Okay, so from securing your digital ID, let's move into the wild west of online distribution. Once your music hits the stores, what happens? Something stood out to me. DistroKid says rights are non-exclusive. That's kind of unusual, isn't it? Most want exclusivity. What's the catch?
Yeah, you're right. It is generally uncommon. And it gives artists, you know, more flexibility. The catch, if you can call it that, is DistroKid does warn that double listing, sending the same track to the same stores through different services, might cause problems. So while you technically can use multiple distributors for the same stores, they're saying, hey, this could get complicated. Might even get flagged by the stores.
Okay. And what about promotional use or free previews?
Yeah.
The terms say stores might offer your music free or give previews. And DistroKid says point blank, they are not liable. What does that really mean for an artist?
Well, it means the risk. It's all on you. If Spotify or Apple Music decides to give your track away in some promotion, DistroKid just washes its hands of it. Your potential earnings for that time could just poof, disappear. And you can't go back to DistroKid about it. It puts a lot of power with the stores.
Yeah, sobering. So, given that, when can DistroKid actually pull your music down?
Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's tied to stuff like this. The wording felt really strong.
It is strong. They give themselves a lot of room. They can refuse to distribute or just remove your music if they get any legal claim. Notice it says claim, not like proven infringement. So an accusation could be enough. They can also remove it if they reason believe that any legal claims or issues may arise. Just a belief. Or if your recording may violate a store's terms like copyright issues based on DistroKid's business judgment. And then there's the standard stuff, like if their deal with the store ends or the store closes. The last one's pretty boilerplate, to be fair.
Okay, so that last one's normal, but the others? The claim, the belief, the business judgment. That feels like where the concern is, right?
Yeah, right?
It's about them acting against your music, maybe even your royalties, based on suspicion, not proof. Gives them a ton of power.
Precisely. That discretion, that's where you can be vulnerable. Now let's shift to your account and payments, because this is where it really hits home. They say they have sole discretion on refunds. pretty standard. And they're authorized to charge your card on file or, importantly, deduct or set off any fees you owe from your current or future royalties. That's the first time they explicitly say they can dip into your earnings.
And for artists releasing cover songs, this next bit seems crucial. What's the financial trap here, and how can you avoid it with DistroKid?
Yes, this is a great question. A real money-saving hack here. If you use DistroKid for cover songs, they bill you regularly for the mechanical licenses, like maybe $5 a month per song. Now, a mechanical license, just quickly, is permission from the songwriter to reproduce their song. You need it for covers. The pro tip: consider getting a one-time mechanical license yourself. Use a third party like Harry Fox Agency or Easy Song Licensing. Over time, especially with multiple covers, that one-time fee, it can be way, way cheaper than DistroKid's recurring charge. Think like $60 a year per song versus maybe a $15 one-time fee. Big savings potential.
Wow, that's a fantastic hack. Puts money right back in your pocket. Okay, let's talk about the agreement term. It's 1 year, auto-renews. But despite that, I read it as artists actually having, well, a surprising amount of freedom. Am I getting that right?
You are spot on. Yeah, this is a real plus for DistroKid compared to some others. While the term is a year auto-renewing, you actually have a lot more freedom. You can take your music down or even have it on other platforms really at any point during that term. So that term isn't as restrictive as it sounds or as it might be elsewhere.
So you're not totally locked in. That's good to know. Now, DistroKid, like most companies, says they may terminate the term for any reason. That sounds broad, but maybe common. We've seen examples, right? IP issues, stores rejecting content, even lyrical stuff like with Tom McDonald and TuneCore.
Yeah, from any reason is very common language for companies. Okay. Standard stuff, really, gives them flexibility if there are problems.
But here's something that seems like a really big positive in their terms. What happens to royalties after the agreement ends?
Yes. This is where DistroKid really stands out, and it's critical. Unlike some situations where you might hear about future royalties being forfeited if you terminate, DistroKid explicitly says that after the term ends, their only obligation is to account and pay for monies earned during the term. This means even if they terminate you or you leave, they will pay out money that came in from streams or sales that happened before termination. Even if the money arrives later, like quarterly payments, it protects your past earnings.
Yeah.
Huge deal.
That is a massive relief and definitely sets them apart. Okay, shifting gears slightly. Grant of rights, artist responsibilities. They get non-exclusive rights, can sublicense to third parties like Facebook, Instagram for distribution. Feels pretty standard, right? Just covering their bases.
Absolutely. Standard industry practice. They need those rights to legally send your music everywhere. And yeah, allowing third parties like Facebook to use it in their features. They also mentioned Hyperfollow. That's their free promo page tool. You grant them a license to play your music there too. But more importantly, the terms really stress that you, the artist, are solely responsible for getting all necessary rights, licenses, clearances, including publishing rights.
And that ties directly back to why you absolutely need written agreements, right? Split sheets, collab agreements. It's not just for you and your bandmates. It's legal protection. DistroKid even have that disclaimer. We don't give legal advice. Consult a lawyer. What's the real power behind putting that in writing?
Well, that clause is very powerful for them. When a company tells you upfront, get a lawyer, it makes the contract much harder for you to challenge later. You can't really argue you didn't understand it because they specifically told you to get expert advice. It puts the responsibility squarely on you to know what you're signing.
Okay, now for the money talk. Payment and accounting. This is where things get interesting. DistroKid says they post 100% of any and all monies that we actually earn and receive. Good start. But that's after deductions, right? PayPal fees, mechanical license fees if you opted in, 20% for content ID if you chose that. Those deductions seem pretty standard, though.
Agreed. Those specific deductions are generally considered acceptable and transparent. They also have this clause about lump sum payments, money from stores that isn't linked to specific artists. DistroKid says they have sole discretion to distribute that money, maybe pro rata based on earnings, or equally, it's a bit weird, like, why would that happen? But maybe comparable to when platforms demonetize small channels and redistribute. Not totally out of left field, I guess.
Okay, but here's something every single listener needs to hear. Loud and clear. Any objection to an accounting statement or any lawsuit about it must be made no later than 1 year after the date the statement is rendered. Quote, unquote. If you miss that year, you waive your rights. This is huge, right?
This is absolutely critical. I can't stress it enough. You have to pay attention. You need to look at your accounting statements regularly, download them, save them. Because a year. It flies by. And if you don't review an object in time, you could be legally blocked from making a claim later, even a totally valid one. And remember, the terms also say you have no right to inspect or audit their books or the store's books. So those statements, that's your main window.
Wow, that's a serious deadline. Okay, now for maybe the most, let's say, juicy and concerning part, withholding payments. DistroKid says they may suspend or terminate and/or withhold payment if they get a claim, or just suspect issues like infringement, ownership disputes, or if your activities involve, and get this list, misrepresentation, misconduct, deception, fraud, or other inappropriate conduct. That sounds incredibly broad.
It is incredibly broad, and this is where it gets really problematic. The huge issue here is that those terms, misrepresentation, misconduct, deception, fraud, inappropriate conduct, they're not defined anywhere in the contract. They're just lowercase words. Why does that matter so much? Because undefined vague language like that, it gives DistroKid almost complete unilateral power to decide what those words mean in your situation. It's a wide open door for them to interpret almost anything you do as falling under one of those categories, potentially justifying holding your money based on very subjective grounds. Now, it's normal for companies to hold funds to cover costs if they have to deal with a legit claim against you, lawyer fees, etc. And DistroKid can deduct those related attorney fees and legal costs, which seems reasonable if tied to actual costs. But the trigger for withholding being so vague, that's the big red flag.
So it's not just about covering costs. It's the power to decide what counts as misconduct in the first place. And then the ultimate yikes moment, the clause that makes you sit up straight. You will forfeit any monies that are attributable to your fraud, infringement, or other illegal activity.
Mm-hmm.
Again, fraud and infringement are lowercase, undefined. This feels really aggressive.
It's more than aggressive. It's a direct threat to your income. Imagine busting your hump on a release, getting streams, and then poof, earnings confiscated based on an unproven claim of fraud or infringement. Mm-hmm. The fundamental argument against this is, why should the distributor keep that money? Especially based on claims, not proven facts. Ideally, money from actual fraud should go back to the platforms, the advertisers, whoever was actually harmed, not just kept by the middleman. This clause effectively lets DistroKid act as judge, jury, and executioner over your earnings. It seriously undermines trust.
That's a truly chilling prospect for any artist. Okay, let's quickly cover a few miscellaneous but important points. You agree to indemnify and hold harmless DistroKid. Basically, you pay their legal fees if they get sued because of something you did. Standard stuff, but ideally should be mutual and negotiated deals.
Right. They also offer services as is, limit their liability, also common practice. Companies face tons of claims. But here's a crucial procedural bit. The cure period for breach. DistroKid won't be liable for a breach they could fix unless you give them written notice specifying the alleged breach and they don't fix it within 90 days.
And this is a super practical self-help tip for you, our listener. If you ever need to send that formal notice, a demand letter, whatever, the email address is right there in the terms. legal@distrokid.com. Knowing that specific address, legal@distrokid.com, means you can communicate directly, start that 90-day clock if you need to. It's empowering.
Exactly. And finally, they reserve the right to modify, discontinue, or terminate the service, including features like Dr. Lock, anytime, without prior notice.
Oh.
They're under no obligation to provide the service continuously. Again, normal for a private company, but underscores our control.
So, okay, let's wrap this up. What does this all mean for you?
Yeah.
Our deep dive into DistroKid's terms shows this kind of dual nature, doesn't it? Some things, like the non-exclusive rights, paying out royalties after termination, those are pretty reasonable, even artist-friendly.
Yeah.
More freedom than you might expect.
Yeah, definitely some positives. But then you have these other clauses, particularly around withholding and, crucially, forfeiting royalties based on vague, undefined claims like misconduct or inappropriate conduct. Those are really problematic. They raise big questions about fairness, transparency, accountability, shows where you're still vulnerable.
So the core takeaways for you, our client, listening right now. First, please read your contracts. We know it's a drag, but understanding this stuff matters. Second, keep meticulous track of your ISRC codes. That's your golden ticket for keeping your play history if you move. Third, that cover song hack. Seriously, look into one-time mechanical licenses. Could save you real money. And fourth, maybe most importantly, regularly review your accounting statements. That one-year clock for objections is ticking. Don't let it run out and bar you from a claim.
And don't forget that contact point, legal@distrokid.com, and the 90-day cure period procedure. Know how to formally raise an issue if you need to.
Right. Now, for a final thought to chew on as you navigate your career, An independent artist relies so heavily on these distributors, right? They're the gateway to Spotify, Apple Music, effectively glorified banks holding your earnings. Given this crucial, often one-sided relationship, where the terms can allow them to just keep your money based on vague, unproven claims, well, how should that power dynamic be balanced? What responsibilities should these companies truly have, and how can you best protect yourself? It's a huge question shaping the industry right now.